Aunt Hannah and Seth. Chapter 1. An advertisement. A small boy with a tiny white dog in his arms stood near the New York approach to the Brooklyn Bridge on a certain June morning not many years since, gazing doubtfully at the living tide which flowed past him, as if questioning whether it might be safe to venture across the street. Seth Barrows, otherwise known by his acquaintances as Limpy Seth, because of what they were pleased to speak of as a pair of legs that weren't mates, was by no means dismayed by the bustle and apparent confusion everywhere around him. Such scenes were familiar, he having lived in the city, so far as he knew, from the day of his birth, but, owing to his slight lameness, it was not always a simple matter for him to cross the crowded streets. "Hi, Limpy," a shrill voice cried from amid the pedestrians in the distance, and as Seth looked quickly toward the direction from which had come the hail, he noted that a boy with hair of such a vivid hue of red as would attract particular attention from any person within whose range of vision he might come, was frantically trying to force a passage. Seth stepped back to a partially sheltered position beneath the stairway of the overhead bridge, and awaited the coming of his friend. "Upswellin', are you?" the boy with the red hair asked, as he finally approached, panting so heavily that it was with difficulty he could speak. "Goin' to give up business? I got rid of my stock quite a while ago, and counted on giving Snip a chance to run in the park. The poor little duffer don't have much fun down at Mother Heights while I'm working. You might sell him for a pile of money, Limpy, and he's a heap of bother for you," the newcomer said reflectively, as he stroked the dog's long, silken hair. "Teddy Dixon says he's got good blood in him. Look here, Tim, do you think I'd sell Snip, no matter how much money I might get for him? Why, he's the only relation I've got in all this world." And the boy buried his face in the dog's white hair. "It costs more to keep him than you put out for yourself. What of that? He thinks a heap of me, Snip does, and he'd be as sorry as I would if anything happened to one of us. Yes, I reckon you are kinder stuck on him. It is a pity, Limpy, 'cause you can't hustle same's the rest of us do, and so don't earn as much money. Snip has what Milky needs. And half the time you feed him by going hungry yourself." "What of that?" Seth cried sharply. "Don't I tell you we two are the only friends each other's got? I'd a good deal rather get along with the things than let him go hungry, 'cause he wouldn't know why I couldn't feed him. A dog is only a dog, and that's all you can make out of it. I ain't counting but that Snip is better in the general run, 'cause, as Teddy Dixon says, he's blooded, but just the same it don't stand to reason you should treat him like he was as good as you. He's a heap better than I am, Tim Chandler. Snip never did a mean thing in his life, and he's the same as a whole family to me." As if understanding that he was the subject of the conversation, the dog pressed his cold nose against the boy's neck, and the latter cried triumphantly. "There, look at that. If you didn't have any folks, Tim Chandler, and couldn't get round same as other fellers do, don't you reckon his snuggling up like this would make you love him?" "He ain't really yours," Tim said after a brief pause, whereat the lame boy cried fiercely. "What's the reason he ain't? Didn't I find him most froze to death more'n a year ago, and haven't I kept him in good shape ever since? Of course he wasn't mine at first, but I'd like to see the chump who'd dare to say he belonged to anybody else. If you didn't own any more of a home than you could earn selling papers, and if nobody cared the least little bit whether you was cold or hungry, you'd think it was mighty fine to have a chum like Snip. You oughter see him when I come in after he's been shut up in the room all the forenoon. It seems like he'd jump out of his skin, he's so glad to see me. I tell you, Tim, Snip loves me just like I was his mother." Master Chandler shook his head doubtfully, and appeared to be on the point of indulging some disparaging remark, when his attention was diverted by a lad on the opposite side of the street, who was making the most frantic gestures, and, as might be guessed by the movement of his lips, shouting at the full strength of his lungs, but the words were drowned by the rattle of vehicles and other noises of the street. "There's Pip Smith, and what do you suppose he's got in his ear now?" Tim said speculatively, but with little apparent interest in the subject. "He's allers botherin' his head about something that ain't any of his business. He allows he'll be a detective when he gets big enough." Seth gave more attention to the caresses Snip was bestowing upon him than to his acquaintance opposite, until Tim exclaimed, with a sudden show of excitement. "He's yelling for you, Seth. What's he swinging that newspaper round his head for?" Perhaps Tim might have become interested enough to venture across the street, had Master Smith remained on the opposite side very long, but just at that moment the tide of travel slackened sufficiently to admit of a passage, and the excited Pip came toward his acquaintances at full speed. "What kind of a game have you been up to, Limpy?" he demanded, waving the newspaper meanwhile. Seth looked at the speaker in astonishment, but without making any reply. "Anything gone wrong?" Tim asked, gazing inquiringly from one to the other. "I don't know what he means," Seth replied, and Pip shouted wildly. "Listen to him. You'd think butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, and yet he has been riding a mighty high hoss, according to all I can find out." "Who?" Seth demanded, grown restive under Pip's accusing gaze. "You, of course. But I haven't been up to any game. You can't stuff me with that kind of talk, 'cause I've got it down here in black and white." "Got what down?" Tim asked impatiently. "If there's anything wrong, why don't you come out with it like a man, and not stand there like a dummy? Seth Barrows will find there's something wrong when the whole Pearl Ice force of this city gets after him," Pip replied, in what was very like a threatening tone. "Listen to this, Tim Chandler, and try to figure out the kind of a game Limpy's been playing." Then, with a tragic glare, Master Smith read slowly from the newspaper he had been brandishing, the following advertisement. "Information wanted of a boy calling himself Seth Barrows. Said boy is about 11 years old, his left leg an inch shorter than the right, and is known to have been living in Jersey City 3 years ago. He then sold newspapers for a livelihood, and resided with one Richard Jennett. A liberal reward will be paid for any information concerning him. Address Simons and Simons, attorneys at law." As he ceased reading, Master Smith looked at his companions with a certain gleam of triumph in his eyes, but this expression quickly changed to one of severe reproof as he met Seth's bewildered gaze. "Selling papers is good enough for me, though it ain't a business that brings in any too much money," he said sharply. "But I don't keep a fancy dog, so the cost of living ain't so high." "What does it mean?" Seth asked in a low tone, as he gazed alternately at Tim and Pip. "Mean?" The latter replied scornfully. "I reckon you can answer that better than we could. When the bank on Broadway was broke into, there was the same kind of notice in the papers, for I saw it with my own eyes. But I haven't been breaking into any bank," Seth wailed, hugging Snip yet more tightly to his bosom. "Then what's that advertisement there for?" And Master Smith looked upon his acquaintance with an air of judicial severity. "How do I know?" Now it was Tim's turn to gaze at Seth reproachfully, and as the three stood there, one and another of their acquaintances, having heard the startling news, came up eagerly curious and positive that Snip's master had committed some terrible crime. The lame boy gave ample token of mental distress, as well he might after hearing that two attorneys at law were desirous of finding him, and more than one of the throng set down the expression of trouble on his face as strong proof of guilt. Although conscious that he had committed no crime, the boy was thoroughly alarmed at being thus advertised for. He knew that rewards were offered for information which would lead to the apprehension of criminals, and never so much as dreamed that similar methods might be employed in a search for those who were innocent. There was no reason, so he might have said to himself, why any lawyer in the city of New York would care to see him, unless he had been accused of some crime, but as he revolved the matter in his mind, terror took possession of him until all power of reflection had departed. The number of alleged friends or acquaintances had increased, until Seth and Snip were literally surrounded, and every member of the throng knew full well that the gathering would be rudely dispersed by the first policeman who chanced to come that way. Therefore it was that each fellow hastened to give his opinion as to the reason why the advertisement had been inserted in the columns of the paper, and, with five or six boys speaking at the same moment, it can well be understood that no one of them succeeded in making any very great impression upon the minds of his neighbors. Seth understood, however, that every boy present was agreed upon the supposed fact that a great crime had been committed, although these young merchants might, upon due reflection, come to realize how improbable was such a supposition. When little Snip, seeming to understand that his master was in sore distress, licked the boy's cheek, it was to Seth almost as if the dog shared in the belief of those who were so ready to accuse him, and he could restrain his feelings no longer. Leaning against the iron column which supported the staircase, with his face buried in Snip's silky hair, the crippled lad gave way to tears, while his companions gazed at him severely, for to their minds this show of grief was much the same as a confession of guilt. A blue-coated guardian of the peace dispersed the throng before those composing it had time to make audible comment upon this last evidence of an accusing conscience, but Seth was so bowed down by bewilderment, sorrow, and fear as not to know that he stood alone with Snip, while a throng of acquaintances gazed at him from the opposite side of the street. Once the officer had passed on, and was at a respectful distance, Seth's friends returned, and it could be understood from their manner that some definite plan of action had been decided upon during the enforced absence. "See here, Seth, we ain't such chumps as to jump on a feller when he's down. If you don't want to tell us what you've been doing." "I haven't done a thing, and you know it, Tim Chandler," the lad moaned, speaking with difficulty because of his sobs. "Then what's the notice about?" Tim asked in a severe, yet friendly tone. "I don't know any more than you do. Where's the lead nickel Mickey Doubt says somebody shoved on you the other day?" Teddy Dixon asked sharply. Seth raised his head, looked about him for a moment as a shadow of fear passed over his face, and, dropping Snip for an instant, plunged both hands deep in his trousers pockets. Withdrawing them, he displayed a small collection of silver and copper coins, which he turned over eagerly, his companions crowding yet more closely to assure themselves that the examination was thorough. "It's gone," Seth cried shrilly. "It's gone, but I'll cross my throat if I knew I was passing it." Snip, hearing his young master's cry of fear, stood on his hind feet, scratching and clawing to attract attention, and, hardly conscious of what he did, Seth took the little fellow in his arms once more. "That settles the whole business," Teddy Dixon cried, in the tone of one who has made an important discovery. "You shoved it on somebody who'd been looking for counterfeit money, and now the detectives are after you." Seth glanced quickly and apprehensively around, as if fearing the officers of the law were already close upon him, and the seeming mystery was unraveled. From that moment there was not even the shadow of a doubt in the minds of Seth's acquaintances, and, believing that he had not intended to commit such a grave crime, the sympathies of all were aroused. "You've got to skip mighty quick," Tim said, after a brief pause, during which each lad had looked at his neighbor as if asking what could be done to rescue the threatened boy. "Where'll I go?" Seth cried tearfully. "They know what my name is, and there ain't much use for me to hide." "You can bet I wouldn't hang round here many seconds," one of the group said, in a low tone, glancing around to make certain his words were not overheard by the minions of the law. "If we fellers keep our mouths shut, and you sneak off into the country somewhere, I don't see how anybody could find you." "But where'd I go?" Seth asked, his tears checked by the great fear which came with the supposed knowledge of what he had done. "Anywhere. Here's Snip all ready to take a journey for his health, and in 10 minutes you'll be out of the city, but it ain't safe to hang round thinking of it very long, for the detectives will be running their legs off trying to earn the money that's promised by the advertisement." Seth made no reply, and his most intimate friends understood that if he was to be saved from prison the time had arrived when they must act without waiting for his decision. They held a hurried consultation, while Seth stood caressing Snip, without being really conscious of what he did, and then Teddy and Tim ranged themselves either side of the culprit who had unwittingly brought himself under the ban of the law. Seizing him by the arms, they forced the lad forward in the direction of Broadway, Tim saying hoarsely to those who gave token of their intention to follow, "You fellers must keep away, else the cops will know we're up to something crooked. Wait here, and me and Teddy'll come back as soon as we've taken care of Seth." This injunction was not obeyed without considerable grumbling on the part of the more curious, and but for the efforts of two or three of the wiser heads, the fugitive and his accomplices would have aroused the suspicions of the dullest policeman in the city. "You'll get yourselves into a heap of trouble if anybody knows you helped me to run away," Seth said, in a tone of faint remonstrance. "It can't be helped," Teddy replied firmly, urging the hunted boy to a faster pace. "We ain't going to stand by and see you lugged off to jail while there's a show of our doing anything. Keep your eye on Snip so's he won't bark, and we'll look after the rest of the business." Even if Seth had been averse to running away from the possible danger which threatened, he would have been forced to continue the flight so lately begun, because of the energy displayed by his friends. Tim and Teddy literally dragged him along, crossing the street at one point to avoid a policeman, and again dodging into a friendly doorway when the guardians of the peace came upon them suddenly. Had anyone observed particularly the movements of these three lads, the gravest suspicions must have been awakened, for they displayed a consciousness of guilt in every movement, and showed plainly that their great desire was to escape scrutiny. Seth was so enveloped in sorrow and fear as to be ignorant of the direction in which he and Snip were being forced. He understood dimly that those who had the business of escape in hand were bent on gaining the river, but to more than that he gave no heed. Finally, when they were arrived at a ferry slip, Teddy paid the passage money, and Seth was led to the forward end of the boat, in order, as Tim explained, that he might be ready to jump ashore instantly the pier on the opposite side was gained, in case the officers of justice had tracked them thus far. Now, forced to remain inactive for a certain time, Seth's friends took advantage of the opportunity to give him what seemed to be much-needed advice. The minute the boat strikes the dock, you must take a sneak, Teddy said impressively, clutching Seth vigorously by the shoulder to ensure attention. We'll hang round here to make sure the detectives haven't got onto your trail, and then we'll go back. But what am I to do afterward? Seth asked helplessly. There ain't any need of very much guessing about that. You're bound to get where there'll be a chance of hiding, and you want to be mighty lively. Snip and I will have to earn money enough to keep us going, and how can it be done while I'm hiding? How much have you got now? About 50 cents. Tim drew from his pocket a handful of coins, mostly pennies, and, retaining only 3 cents with which to pay his return passage on the ferry boat, forced them upon the fugitive, saying when the boy remonstrated, "You'll need it all, and I can hustle a little livelier tonight, or borrow from some of the other fellers if Trey don't show up as it oughter." Teddy followed his comrade's example, paying no heed.